Okay, we're continuing our series on Ben Adam L'Chavero. And I don't know who was able to call in last week. We had a call-in. Fortunately, we weren't able to make it out in the snow. Last week, we spoke about Lashon Hara and how it's related to the suffering of Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim. There's a source sheet right over here. I'm going to grab one. And tonight, I want to continue with the topic of Hakaras HaTov. But to make that transition from last week's Lashon Hara to Hakaras HaTov, I want to go back to something that we mentioned last week. And that is when Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, the Rambam said this is like the ultimate example of a person who spoke the most innocent Lashon Hara in the world. Meaning Miriam spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, who was her brother, and she didn't have evil intentions, and it was Moshe wasn't makbid on it. And yet Miriam is still an example of someone who spoke Lashon Hara to such a degree that the Torah says, remember what Miriam did when she spoke Lashon Hara. There's a Rashi at the beginning of Parsha Shlach, you have it on the page in front of you, source number one, where Rashi notices, and Chazal noticed, the Smichas Parshas. Chazal noticed, there's source sheets right over there if you want to grab one. Optional. Where Rashi notices the connection between Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu and the Meraglim, which comes right after. Meaning Miriam speaks Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of Parshas Baal Oscha. And then the beginning of Parshas Shlach, we find that the Meraglim are guilty of speaking Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi says something, which we can ask, I think, a very obvious question. Rashi says in source number one, Shlach lecha anashim, Loma nismacha parshas meraglim of parshas Miriam. Why does the Torah tell us about the parsha of the meraglim next to the parsha of Miriam at the end of Baal Oscha? Lefisha loksal iske diba shedibra be'achia. Then Miriam spoke lashon hara about her brother. Virisham ala'u ra'u v'lo lachu musar. And the brother, and these individuals, these wicked meraglim, saw what happened to Miriam and they didn't learn their lesson. So someone asked me a simple question. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, and the Meraglim, right afterwards, they should have learned. What's the problem? The problem is Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against the God of Hador, against the Manhig of Klal Yisrael. The Meraglim spoke against dirt of Eretz Yisrael, no doubt. Right? But why is it obvious if... Farshim asked this question. Right. Why is it obvious that the Meraglim should be able to learn from Miriam? Miriam spoke Lashon Hara against the God of Hador, and the Meraglim said, Eretz Yisrael is not for us, it's too dangerous. Why should we assume that they were able to learn from what happened to Miriam? This is the question that the Imre Emes, the Ger Rebbe, the third Ger Rebbe, asks in one of his letters, in Michtavei Torah, in his letters, and he says it's not obvious at all. In fact, the opposite would make sense. Meaning, if we have a sensitivity towards an inanimate object, to say then, to apply that to a person, that would make sense. We have such an example. Where do we have such an example? In Parshas Yisro, in source number 2, when the Kohanim are going up, when they're ascending the ramp, on the way to the Mizbeach, it's a ramp and it's not steps. Why is it a ramp and not steps? Because if the Kohen takes a step, Kohanim wore clothing which was more like a dress than a pair of pants, right? The Kohanim's, their cloak would go up, and it would expose maybe a little bit of their leg, and it would be a lack of tznias. Now the truth is they were wearing pants, right? So it's a super tznius, it's a super sensitivity. So says Rashi in source number 2 in Parshas Yisro, at the very end where it's bolded, Varei dvarm kal v'chomer. Look how careful we need to be. Uma avanim halalu she'ein behem das lahakbid al bizyonan amra Torah ho'el v'yesh behem tzarech lo tenag behem minag bizayon. When you're walking up steps, it would be a disgrace. So therefore, we put a ramp in the Beis Hamikdash, so the steps shouldn't have to see an uncovered Kohen's leg. It's like, it's a crazy sensitivity as far as sneas goes. So all the more so. So if we're so sensitive not to insult a rock, to not to insult a ramp, so all the more so your friend, Shehu b'dmus yotzrecha, your friend is created in the image of your creator, u'machbid al biziono, and is sensitive, and is a person who cares about how he's treated. The steps could care less. Al achas kam v'kam, how much more sensitive do we need to be? That makes sense. If we're sensitive to a stone, we need to be sensitive to a person. The Rashi in Parsha Shlach is the opposite. Miriam wasn't sensitive to the Gadol Ador, and therefore the Meraglim should have known to be sensitive to stones. How do you understand such a thing? So the Ger Rebbe says it could be, it's possible that Moshe in his humility made himself like a stone. Meaning only someone of Moshe's caliber, who didn't care what Miriam said about him, could be compared to the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. Moshe was as not makbid on his own kavod as a stone or a piece of dirt. That's what the Ger Rebbe suggests in his letter, again in this Michtavei Torah, in letter 144. There's a Gemara in Erechin also, in source number 3, right, that says if a person speaks Lashon Hara You see how terrible Lashon Hara is. If a person spoke Lashon Hara against rocks, like the Meraglim did, halachas kam v'kama to another person. But the Ger Rebbe, the Meraglim said, Moshe Rabbeinu made himself like a piece of dirt. So it didn't matter. As far as Moshe was concerned, the Meraglim should have learned from him. In his humility, it was no different speaking badly about Moshe Rabbeinu than it was speaking against Eretz Yisrael. Okay, could be. But that's all within the realm of Lashon Hara. That was last week's topic. But I think we would all agree, kal v'chomer, I think we would all agree that if a person has to have Hakar Sato, which is what we're going to talk about tonight, for water, and we'll see the example, if a person has to have a Hakar Satov to dirt, then certainly, again, halachas kam v'kama, we have to have a Hakar Satov to what? To human beings. To our fellow Jews, we're not going to, again, this is Ben Adam L'Chavera, we're not going to focus so much on how much thanks we need to have to God. There's plenty to talk about there. Right? But we see the sensitivity in this week's parsha, Hakar Satov, a sense of gratitude towards dirt and water. So halachas kam v'kama, we have to have that sense of gratitude to people for the kind things that they do for us. Where do we find in this week's parsha that someone showed hakaras hatov to dirt and to water? So of course, this week we start the makos. 7 of the 10 makos appear in our parsha. 3 will appear in next week's parsha. And of course, it begins with the makah of dam. How did dam come about? How did the water turn to blood? Says the pasuk in source number 4, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Emor el Aaron, Tzei to Aaron. Moshe, you tell Aaron, Kach matcha unite yodcha al meimei Mitzrayim. Aaron, take your staff and stretch out your hand over the water of Mitzrayim, over all types of water, and the water will turn to blood. And so it was. Why couldn't Moshe put out his own staff over the water of Mitzrayim? Starting first and foremost with the Or, the Nile River, the Naharos, the Agamim, all the different bodies of water. Aaron, stretch out your hand and you turn the water to blood. Why couldn't Moshe turn the water to blood? Says Rashi in source number 5, it's not that Moshe wasn't capable. Moshe knew how to do this. It wasn't like Moshe's inability to speak. There he really needed Aaron's help. Here Moshe was asked by God, you tell Aaron to do it. Don't do it yourself. What sensitivity was Hashem teaching Moshe Rabbeinu? Says Rashi in source number 5, Emor al Aaron, tell Aaron to do it. Lefi shehegin hayor al Moshe kishenish lachosocha. Hashem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, you can't be the one to turn the Nile River into blood. You know why? You can't make any water turn into blood. You know why? Because you have to have a unique type of a Hakar Satov to water. Moshe Rabbeinu said, why do I have to have a Hakar Satov to water? Because your life was in danger, and you were placed in the water, and when everyone else was placed in the water, they drowned, but you survived. So you have to have a Hakar Satov to water. Unbelievable. Such sensitivity. Lefichach, says Rashi, lo laka al yado, lo bidam, ve lo betzvardayim, ve laka al yidei Aaron. And therefore the water was afflicted. It was struck by Aaron a Kohen, both by the Makkah of Dam and Tzvardaya. Because Moshe had this unique type of Hakar Satov to the water that protected his life. Dam, Tzvardaya, what's next? Kinim. Kinim again. Moshe Rabbeinu can't be the one to make the earth, to make the dirt beneath their feet turn into lice. Why? Says the pasuk in source number 6, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe again, Emor al Aaron, tell Aaron to do it. Niteyas matcha v'hachas afar haaretz. Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dirt. You be the one to do it. Moshe, you tell Aaron to do it, you're not able to do it. Again, why is Moshe not able to create the kinim? Why is Moshe not able to do so? It says Rashi in source number 7, Emor al Aaron, lo haya ha'afer kadai lilkos al yedei Moshe. The dirt was not fitting. It would be improper for Moshe Rabbeinu to strike the dirt. Why? Lefi shehegin alav kishaharegas ha'mitzru v'yitmenei uvachol. Because Moshe says, this sand also saved my life. When Moshe saw the Mitzri beating the Jew, and Moshe looks this way and that, Vayarki ain't ish, and he strikes down the Mitzri. And Moshe Rabbeinu defends Klal Yisrael for the first time. He's got to, what's he going to do with the body? So he buries it in the sand. So Moshe Rabbeinu has to have unbelievable hakar. So I can't hit the dirt that protected me, that saved my life, if not for those informers. Dustin Vaviram would cause trouble in last week's parsha. So therefore, the dirt was not fit to be hit by Moshe Rabbeinu, because the ground itself protected him, and therefore concludes Rashi, V'loka al yedei Aaron. And therefore it was struck by Aaron. Now let's get really crazy about this for a second. Let's just see how far this goes. Because you could say, well, Aaron also benefits from water. Maybe anyone who ever benefited from water can't do something to harm water. We all benefit from water. Our lives depend upon water. I saw this week in a sefer called Nachas Tzvi. It's a more contemporary sefer. Rabbi Lazar Yehuda Leib Pinter. He asks in this week's parsha, maybe Aaron also has to have a Hakar Satov to water. So he says, no, obviously Moshe has a unique Hakar Satov to water. It's not just any water that takes care of a person. Moshe here was saved by the same body of water that so many other Jewish babies drowned in. Meaning, so to speak, the water went above and beyond for Moshe Rabbeinu, The same water that brought about the end of so many people, the demise of so many young Jewish babies, that same water that protected Moshe Rabbeinu, the water went out of its way for me. I have to have extra Hakaras HaTov. He could argue that Moshe has to have Hakaras HaTov to the basket and the reeds that he was hiding in also. He has to have Hakaras HaTov to his sister Miriam, who watched over him. There's a lot to learn here. Right? But says the Nachla Svi, it was the unique degree of protection that the water offered Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu had to go above and beyond as far as this. What about the earth? The earth, you could say, is just doing its job. The earth is made for burying people. That's part of its job. But we see from here, says the Nachla Svi, that when someone does something that they're even expected to do, you still have to be thankful. When parents pay their children's tuition, my parents were nice. They didn't come tonight. I didn't want to make it awkward for me. I owe them a lot of Hakaras HaTov, but much more than I've unfortunately expressed over the course of my lifetime. I was thinking about it a lot this week. All the hundreds of thousands of dollars for school, for camp, for so many things. Helping us and helping me and my brothers in so many ways. It's unbelievable. So you'll say, but it's their job. What do you mean? They're your parents. It's Achrayus. They created you. They have to take care of you. But we see from the fact that Moshe can't even hit the ground that took care of him, Moshe Rabbeinu feels, even something that did its job, I still have to be thankful. I'll give you a good example. There's a minhag Yisrael that when the Kohanim come down from Duchening, everyone gives them a shkoyach. They say thank you to the Kohanim. So you could ask, why do I have to say thank you to the Kohanim? They're just doing their job. If a Kohen fails to Duchen, he's doing an Avera. He's violating he's Mevatel Mitzvah Saseh. Right? Maybe multiple mitzvahs to say to bless Klal Yisrael. So the Kohen's doing his job. Why do I have to thank him? It's good to get the bracha of Hashem through the Kohen, but it's his job. The Rashash in the back of the Gemara of Shmuel Strashon, he writes based on a mission in Shvias in the fourth parak that again you see this yisod that sometimes a person does something that they're expected to do, and yet there's still an achrayus to say thank you. Just because you take it for granted that they're going to do that thing for you doesn't make you less obligated to say thank you and to appreciate what they've done. I've been married for about 14 years now, and it's sort of a chazak in our home that my wife is the one who cooks for Shabbos. I help out once in a while. Tonight, actually, I made, what's it called? Shakshuka. I made shakshuka tonight. Came out pretty good. Right, but there's a chazak at this point that I'm not cooking for Shabbos. Yeah? I mean, I'll help straighten up around the house. I'll do a lot of different things. I have to prepare to speak a few times over Shabbos. I've got my preparation as well. Right, but my wife, I've never made chicken soup in my life. It's a chazakah at this point. So I could say, okay, so I don't have to thank her. That's her job. Right? Rav Simcha Zisel of Kelm, the altar of Kelm, used to stop. And I'm going to try. I'm going to try to take this to heart. I say a lot of things. I have to try to practice what I preach. He used to stop after Friday night after Marav. He'd come back to his home. He'd stop at the door. Rav Simcha Zisel would stop at the door. And he'd stay there for a moment. And he would think, before I walk into my house, let me think about all the things my wife did to make this Shabbos possible. Let me think about all the things that she did. In terms of getting the home together, in terms of the delicious food that she cooked, the challah that she baked, right? Not to take it for granted. A child can't take for granted that parents do things for that child because they have to. A Jew can't take for granted that a Kohen gives him a bracha because he has to. Right? And a husband or a wife can't take it for granted the things that they've always done for one another. Right? There's still an obligation of a Hakaras HaTov. If it's true for a dirt that did its job, that was supposed to bury a person, and Moshe still couldn't strike that dirt, then halach is kama v'kama, how much more so it's true in our relationship with our fellow Jews. When Chazal are reflecting, so to speak, on this idea, just how far Hakaras HaTov goes, there's an interesting lashon, an interesting expression that the Gemara has in Bava Kama, in source number 8. In Bava Kama, daf tzadi beis amud beis. Od amr le rava le rabba bar mari, minaha milsa da amri inchi. It's an expression that's found throughout Shas. Minaha milsa, where is the source? Right? The Amri Inchi, of what people say. The following expression, where is it rooted in the Torah? It's interesting, the B'nai Yisasser, whose Yartzeit was very recently, Rav Tzvi Eli Melech of Dinov, he has a volume called Dvarim Nechmadim, and in there he has a section where he goes through all the Minaha Milsas in Shas, and tries to explain the B'derech Hasidus. So it's an expression you find often in the Gemara. Minaha Milsi, what's the source for the folk saying? Let's see what it is. Here's the saying. Bira Deshasis Minei, the cistern that you drank from, lo tishade be kala. Don't throw stones into it. Right? The well that you drew your water from, don't throw dirt into it. Don't throw stones into it. The cistern that you drank from, don't throw stones into it. Where do we learn? Where's the source for that? That's what people say. That's what a regular person in the street says. Right? Don't throw stones into the water cistern that provided you with water. Right? Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Whatever expression you want to use. Where's the source for that in the Torah? Because everything's rooted in the Torah. Every idea is found in the Torah. So he responded to him, Amrlei dechsiv lo tisaiv adomi ki achichahu. Lo tisaiv mitzri kiger hayisa ba'artsa. Don't be repulsed by it, right? Toeva, don't be disgusted by an Adomi, because he's your brother. After all, Esav, Edom, brother of Yaakov. And don't be disgusted by a Mitzri, ki ger hayisa ba'artso. Now Rashi on that pasuk in Parshas Kiseitze says the following. Don't despise an Adomi. You mean the same Adomi people who came out to fight against us in Bamidbar? They went out to attack us? That we shouldn't despise them? So Rashi says, it just means you shouldn't despise them completely. You have to have a little bit of a karas hatov to them. Because even though they tried to attack us, but like the pasuk says, ki achichahu, it's a brother. You have to have a little bit of rachmanis on them, they're a brother. Esav's a brother to Yaakov in some kind of crazy way. So you have to, don't despise them completely. What about the Mitzrim? Don't despise the Mitzrim. The Mitzrim. There's no one we hate as much as the Mitzrim other than maybe Amalek and the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. The Mitzrim who enslaves Klal Yisrael. Pasuk says, don't hate the Mitzrim, ki ger hayisa ba'artso. Because you lived by them. When did we live by them? We suffered by them. Yeah, but if you think about it, during the time of famine, Yosef and the family of Yaakov, when they first came to Mitzrayim, they were sustained by them. Right? When the whole world was starving, Rashi says, he was the Lashon, they hosted us, b'shas hadchak. In a difficult time, they hosted us. They were the gracious hosts who then went on to enslave us for 210 years. But okay, so a little bit, you see a little bit of a karas hatov. Right? And I think this is sort of, this really answers, again, explains the Maimar Chazal. The well that you drank from, at least don't throw stones into it. Right? The well had to provide for you. The Mitzrim weren't such great hosts. Edom is not such a brother to Yaakov Avinu, to the family of Klal Yisrael. And at the same time, but we have a connection there. And if there's a connection there, at the very least, don't throw stones. At the very least, have a little bit. Don't despise them completely. They're not Amalek. Right? They did do something good for Klal Yisrael. Again, maybe in a roundabout way. But afal pichay, and that's how far a karas hatov has to go. I was reading recently, again, the biography of Rav Irving Bunim. Rav Irving Bunim was a businessman, a philanthropist. He was a person who was also a tremendous lay leader of Klal Yisrael. Passed away near 1980. And for many years in the Young Israel movement, he was a person who was teaching Torah and he was supporting organizations. He was a right-hand man to Rav Aaron Cutler. Always helping Rav Aaron. He was very instrumental in trying to save Jews during the Holocaust. So his son, Amos Bunim, put out a sefer, a biography about him called The Fire in His Soul. And he talks about it so often, he would go out of his way to help people, and sometimes they were thankful, and sometimes just the opposite. So he used to tell the following story. In his biography, on page 297, he tells the following story that Rav Irving Bunim, author of Ethics from Sinai, we have a couple of svarim that he wrote. Beautiful commentary on Pirkei Avos. So he used to tell the following story, he liked this story a lot. The Ger Rebbe, the Imre Yemes, once again, the Imre Yemes, the third Ger Rebbe, one time was visited by a chassid, one of his chassidim. And he said, Rebbe, you know I have the biggest factory in town, but I need 100 zloty by tonight or I'm in big trouble. I'm going to have to close the factory, I'm going to go bankrupt, and many chassidim work for me. A lot of our people are going to be out of business. So the Rebbe said, listen, you come back, let me see what I can do. So the Rebbe sent out his gabbai, and before you know it, he went all around town, 100,000 collected. The chassid came back, and the Rebbe says, before I give you the money, I want to sit down, I want to eat a bowl of cherries with you. I'm going to give you the money, but I want to also, let's have a snack together. They sit down, and they're eating this bowl of cherries, very strange. Sitting with the Imre Yemes, eating this bowl of cherries. And he said, as the Imre Yemes is eating the cherries, he's like licking the pits really clean, and he's lining them up in this very like neat little pile, symmetrically on the table in front of them, in between the two of them. He's making this little pile out of these cherry pits. And the pile's growing. And finally, the chassid said, I don't understand, what are you doing? So the Ger Rebbe said to him with a big smile, he said, listen, very often the people who help you in life are the people you end up throwing stones at. You feel threatened by them because they gave you a jump start, so you want to go to the opposite extreme to show them they didn't do anything for you. Yeah, Lahavdil, that Meshuggah guy in North Korea kills off all his family members because he doesn't want anyone who knows him in that kind of way. I'm a big shot. I can do it on my own. I don't need anyone. I'm not dependent upon anyone. I have no context to my existence. So the Ger Rebbe said, very often, when people become successful, they throw rocks at the people who help them. So he said, I'm just asking, instead of throwing rocks, I'm giving you these cherry pits. You can throw the pits at me instead. Don't throw the rocks. That's what Chazal is saying here. Bir d'shosis minei, at the very least, Edom, Mitzrayim, they're not our best friends. They're not the people who we have the most akaras to tov to. And yet the Torah goes out of its way to say, lo sisa'ev, don't despise. Don't throw rocks into the cistern that provided you with water. But if you look at Rashi on that Gemara, look at Rashi on that Gemara in Bava Kamma, in source number 9, Rashi says an unbelievable thing. Rashi says, what does it mean, don't throw a rock into the cistern that gave you water? Rashi says, you were thirsty. and you drank from that cistern. How many times did you rely upon that cistern? Rashi says in source number 9, he says, Lo teshade bekala muta balaz, it does in old French, klomar, dover hanitzrich lecha pam achas, shum lo tevazeyo. Something that provided for you one time. Something that helped you one time. You were thirsty, and you came upon a water fountain, and you took a drink. For the rest of your life, you have to have a karas tov to that water fountain. You have to have respect for that water fountain. Unbelievable. One time. That's how far a karas tov goes. And you see there were tzaddikim who lived that way. Rav Mordechai Schwab, the brother of Rav Shimon Schwab, lived in Muncie, was involved in yeshivas in Muncie, passed away in 1994. So I once heard that every time when he would finish wearing a particular garment, he had a suit, let's say, that he wore for a period of time, and he was done with the suit was worn out. It was ready to be put away. He would gather his family members together, he'd put the suit down on the dining room table, and publicly, in front of his family members, he would say thank you to the suit. Thank you for all the Shabbosim, all the weddings we went to together, right, all the times we spent together, how you provided for me, you kept me warm on a cold day. Unbelievable. To show a karas tov to a suit. Right? But that's the sensitivity that the tzaddikim had. That even when it comes to things, again, alach is kam v'kam, when it comes to ben adam l'chaver, when it comes to people, a person did a favor for you one time. The Torah says, as Rashi is telling us, is for the smallest thing, a person has to have very, very tremendous sense of a karas tov. Now, I want to just stray into the realm of ben adam l'makom, just for a minute, because I think if I could share this one insight with you from the Yitav Lev, I think it'll help us to understand this Rashi even better. There's a Medrash that I like to quote very often. The Medrash says in the Pasuk, Kol HaNishama Ta'alka HaLukah, it's the last Pasuk in Tehillim, we say it at the end of our Pesukah Zimra, the end of the HaLukahs, Kol HaNishama Ta'alka HaLukah, the Medrash says, Al Kol Nishima U'Nishima Ta'alka. For every breath you take, you should say, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For every little breath, it's a little thing, but it's a big thing. Your life is dependent upon it. But it's interesting. The Yitav Lev, of Yekusiel Yehuda Halberstam, lived in the 1800s. He was the grandfather of the Satmar Rebbe, of the Divrei Yalla. So if Yekusiel Yehuda Halberstam asks him to say for Yitav Lev, why do we say the Pasuk twice? If you open up Tehillim, it appears once. We end that section of the words of David HaMelech, in our Pesukei Dezimra, right? We say that pasuk twice. Kol Anashama Ta'alka Aluka. Kol Anashama Ta'alka Aluka. So some say you repeat a pasuk when it comes to the end of a section signaling this is the end of a particular type of tefillah. Okay, could be. That's B'derach HaPshat, B'derach HaLacha. But the Yitav Lev says an amazing thing. The Yitav Lev, the original Rebbe of Satmar, says, Kol, the word Kol, has a dual meaning to it. Kol HaNishama Ta'alka Aluka. Say it again. Kol HaNishama Talkaluka. The word chaf lamed has a dual meaning. Kol can mean everything, or kol could also mean everything. You get the difference? Kol, thank you Hashem, kol hanisham, thank you HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything you do for me, and also thank you Hashem for everything you do for me. Thank you for every little thing that you do for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a story I love to tell, that my best friend from growing up, my friend Rafi, when I grew up in Philadelphia. So his niece, amazing story happened with his niece. He told me this story. I don't think I ever shared it here, so I'll share it. He said she was in school one day. Must have been Hanukkah time, Thanksgiving time. They were learning about Hakaras HaTov. So the teacher was going around the room asking each of the kids to say, what are they thankful for? So he turns to one little girl, you know, Nechama, what are you thankful for? What am I thankful for? I have my favorite pair of sneakers. Wow, that's great. That's beautiful. Okay, yeah, it's true. Shasali called Sarki. We say a bracha in the morning. Goes to the next one, what are you thankful for? I'm thankful for my toys, for my dolls. I love playing with my Barbies, whatever. Okay, great, beautiful, wonderful. And going around the room, they're saying cute little things. Finally, they come to my friend's niece, and the teacher says, Dasi, what are you thankful for? So Dasi's thinking a second. She's thinking, she goes, Mora, I'm thankful for life. Wow. It's very deep, very profound. So during the break, she goes out and she calls Dasi's mother. And she says, Mrs. Friedman, you know, we were in class today, I just have to give you a nachas note over the phone, you know, it was unbelievable. We're going around, and your daughter said, life is so beautiful. All the girls were saying, yeah, small, simple things. So she said, okay, it's very sweet, it's very nice, you know, it's very deep, very profound. Dasi comes home from school that day, and her mother says to her, says, Dasi, you know, I heard Mora called me today. She said, you were talking about Hakaras HaTov, what it means to be thankful, and you said you were thankful for life. Is it true? Did you really say that? So she looks at her mother without missing a beat. She says, of course, mommy, cinnamon life, I love that cereal. It's my favorite cereal in the world. So that's Kol HaNishama Talka Aluka. And kol ha'neshama ta'ah. She's right. I thank Hashem for the big things. But who else do I thank, if not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the little things? We have to be thankful even for the things that don't happen. Rav Zalman Brizel, who was a very chashev yid in Yerushalayim, there's a couple of great stories there, a lot of great stories about him. One story about him, Rav Zalman one time, he saw his son, and he said, you won't believe what happened today. So he said, what happened? He said, I got up this morning at 2 o'clock. He used to get up at 2 o'clock. Very intense schedule. He said, I got up at 2 o'clock this morning. I don't know what time I went to bed, but I got up at 2 o'clock. And I went to put on my shoes, and the shoelaces were missing. How am I going to go outside without shoelaces? So I'm running around the house. It must be one of the grandkids was over at the house yesterday, took out the shoelaces, and I'm running around trying. So he said, so what'd you do? His son, Rav Nata, said, so what'd you do? So he said, I ran around the house. I finally found one shoelace. So he said, and then what happened? He said, well, I still couldn't go out with one shoelace. I need two shoelaces. So he said, so I'm running around the house. Finally, I found the other shoelace. I set off my whole schedule in the morning. So he says, okay, now what happened? He said, I went to the mikvah, and you're not going to believe what happened. I'm in the mikvah. I come out of the mikvah, and someone stole my clothing. My clothing is gone. Can you imagine? So his son says, wow, so what did you do? So Zalman, with his big smile, says to his son, he says, the truth is, I woke up this morning, and my shoelaces were in my shoes. I went to the mikvah, and no one stole my clothing. Right, Baruch Hashem, I had a great day. You don't have to have unusual things happen to a person for a person to be appreciative. Rav Zalman came home one day, he had his hand, he used to sell milk. That was his profession. Probably made a lot of money in that. So Rav Zalman, one day he comes home, and he's clutching his hand, it's wrapped in a bandage. So his wife says, what happens? What happened to you? So he says, Yerushalayim, it's so steep. And I was going with the wagon and the milk and those steep hills, the wagon could tip over and the milk could break and my hand could get injured. So he says, so what happened? So he takes off the bandage, he says, my hand's fine. He says, the wagon's fine. He said, I didn't sell any milk today. But Baruch Hashem, overall, it was a pretty good day. And when a person starts to think like that, when a person realizes, I have a lot to be thankful. Kol ha'neshama talka haluka. But now let's come back into the realm of Bein Adam L'Chavero. Because in the realm of Bein Adam L'Chavero, it's equally true. A person does a tova for you, or a person doesn't wrong you, that itself is enough to be thankful for. They could have done so many negative things to you. Right? Maybe they even have a track record in the past of doing negative things to you. The fact that they left you alone today, I'm very thankful for that. That's the sensitivity that the Torah wants us to have. There was a dayan in Yerushalayim, named Rav Shalom Eisen. So when his son turned bar mitzvah, he took his son to Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, passed away in the 1950s, Rav Isser Zalman. Rav in Slutsk, and then Yerushalayim at the end of his life. So he took him to Rav Isser Zalman to get a bracha. So he comes and he gives his son a big bracha, beautiful bracha, and he says, listen, Rav Shalom Eisen said, listen, Rav Isser Zalman, I don't want to trouble you. The Shabbos are making a kiddush at our home, but please, I know, please don't come. It's a long walk. I don't want to trouble the Rosh Hashiva that he should come. Rosh Hashiva Yitzchayim, I don't want you to come and be bothered. Of course, Shabbos morning rolls around, and all of a sudden, Rav Isser Zalman walks in. And Rav Shalom Eisen says, Rebbe, I feel terrible. I told you, you don't have to come. It's okay, you don't have to come. So he says, no, I'm here because of Hakaras HaTov. He said, what? Hakaras HaTov to us? We have so much Hakaras HaTov to you. He says, I'm here because of Hakaras HaTov. When you brought your 13-year-old son to me for a bracha the other day, it got me thinking. I said, I remember being the sandik at this kid's bris. This 13-year-old, you know, bar mitzvah bacher was a baby. It seems like yesterday. Time really flies. And I started to think about that. And I said to myself, Rabbi Zalman, you need to make a cheshbon and nefesh. You need to start thinking about your life. You need to start fixing the things that need to be fixed, because life goes by very quickly. And because you taught me about the importance of time and life, out of a Hakaras HaTov, I came personally, I walked a great distance to personally be mishtatif in your simcha. Imagine? They didn't do anything. But because Rabbi Zalman, looking at this kid, this 13-year-old bar mitzvah bacher, remembered he was, it feels like yesterday he was a baby. Rav Isser Zalman, being the thoughtful person he was inspired to do tshuva. That was all Rav Isser Zalman. But he felt that other person generated it. I have to have a karsa tov to that person. The Ger Rebbe, I read in the biography of the Lev Simcha, the fifth Ger Rebbe. There was an elderly Jew who said, the Ger Rebbe for 25 years called me on Erev Yom Kippur to wish me a good year. He would call me before the Yom Naram every single year. For 25 years he called me. Because one time I did a tiny favor for him. You imagine? But he always called and said, remember that time you helped me out? I'm so thankful to you. It's unbelievable, the sensitivity of our tzaddikim, again, to always, always try to go above and beyond, to do a little bit more in terms of a karsa tov. To pay back for every little tova that was done to them. And again, it's a very lofty level, but certainly the people who are regulars in our life, who do a lot for us, we have to pause every now and again and think about, have I properly taken the time to thank the people for making a difference in my life? I want to try to understand, for the last couple of minutes that we have, I want to try to understand why a karsa tov is so central in the life of a Jew. Because the truth is, if you really think back to the beginning of creation, you find that this Mida plays a critical role. When you think about the birth of Klal Yisrael, you see that this Mida plays a critical role. And when you think about each of our individual lives, you see that this Mida plays a very critical role. What do I mean by that? Let's go back to creation. Okay, and we'll learn a Rashi in Parshas Noach to remind us in source number 10. Rashi says in source number 10, when it's referring to the Dor HaFlaga, and Rashi tells us, B'nei HaAdam, the Dor HaFlaga referred to, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, let me go down. They're building their big tower, the big Migdal, the big city. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to go down and see what's going on with these B'nei HaAdam. It doesn't call them B'nei Adam, it calls them B'nei HaAdam. HaAdam sounds like Adam Rishon. So it says Rashi, B'nei HaAdam, Ela B'nei Mi, the people of man, as opposed to what? The people of donkeys, Rashi says, the people of camels. What do you mean the people of man? Ela B'nei Adam HaRishon, Shekafer Es HaTova, V'amer HaIsha Shunasati Madi. These are the descendants, not the physical descendants, although also, but the spiritual heirs, right, to the tragic approach of Adam HaRishon. These are B'nei HaAdam. What does that mean? Adam HaRishon was given Gan Eden. Adam HaRishon was given a beautiful wife. Adam HaRishon was given a magnificent circumstance. And yet, he points the blame to Chava. He's Kafoi Tov. He says, Hashem, you gave me this woman and she got me into trouble. Kafoi Tov, where's your Hakarasa Tov? I gave you your other half. I gave you your partner in life. And that's what you say, Hashem, why'd you give me this lady? She got me in trouble. So too, says Rashi, where it's bolded. Av elu kafru betova limrod b'mi shehishpiyam tova u'malta min hamavel. So too, these people, they're b'nei ha'adam. They're just like Adam Rishon. They also have no respect for people who go out of their way to provide for them in such a significant way. Who is this Dor HaFlaga? This is after the Mabel. This is the byproduct, the family, so to speak, of those who survived the Mabel. After Hashem saved you in the Mabel when most of the world was destroyed, and now you go and you build a tower against God? This is B'nei HaAdam. This is Mamish Lerut. This is the same terrible Midah that Adam HaRishon exhibited at the beginning of time. And therefore you see that in the foundation of the world, both in the behavior of Adam and in the recreation of the world after the Mabel, you see that Kafui Tov, that lack of Akar Satov, ruins everything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls Adam HaRishon out for having bad midos. And what midos does he point to? The fact that he displayed a lack of a Akar Satov. As Torah Jews, when we get the Torah, obviously we're trying to get the world back on track. So it shouldn't surprise us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us by the Aseret HaDibros, the first thing Hashem is going to say to us is you have to have a Akar Satov. How do we see that in the first words of the Dibros? How did the Aseret HaDibros begin? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Otseisicha, Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Yibes Avadim. I am Hashem your God, and I took you out of Egypt, I took you out of captivity, I freed you from Mitzrayim. The Rishonim ask a question on that first sentence of God. First thing God ever said to the Jewish people, I am God who took you out of Mitzrayim. So the Rishonim say, why doesn't it say, I am God who created the world? Go be a God, you know? Why focus on a particular event? Just say, I'm God who's responsible for everything. Whoa, that's great. Why say, I am God who took you out of Mitzrayim, specifically? Rishonim address that question. I saw in a volume from the Biala Rebbe, the one who used to be in Switzerland, now he's in Eretz Yisrael, I believe. And Biala Rebbe writes in one of his svarim, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to Klal Yisrael, listen, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm your God. I'm going to be your God. Right? And you know that to be true. Why? Because I took you out of Mitzrayim. You owe it to me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching Klal Yisrael, not because Hashem really needs it, but Hashem wants Klal Yisrael to understand, when someone does something for you, you better pay them back, ad hasof, as much as you possibly can. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Etzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You owe it to me. Hashem's not doing it because he wants it. Hashem says, I'm teaching what the backbone of being a Jew is, what the backbone of being a human being is, that Adam HaRishon had a lack of Hakar Satov. You, Klai, so you're becoming my people. I want you to know, if someone does something for you, you pay them back as much as you can. That's the sensitivity that a Jew has to have. And that's what's really something we need to think about in these parshios. Think about what's happening here. Think about the Mitzrim taking advantage of Klai. So there's another famous question. Why are the Mitzrim punished for giving us what we deserve? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said in Parshas Lech Lecha by the Bris Bein HaBesarim, the Jews are going to be slaves to another nation. So the Mitzrim come along and they do it. So why are they punished for it? The Rambam addresses this question in Hilchos Tshuva. The Ravid has an answer. The Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha addresses this question. The Meshe Chachma gives an answer which I think is beautiful. The Meshe Chachma in Lech Lecha says, you know why the Mitzrim are punished for taking advantage of the Jews? And again, it just shows that how we come to Kabbalah Satorah, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I took you out of Mitzrayim. I'm teaching you what? Like the Bialy Rabbi said, I'm teaching you a Kar Satov. Someone did something for you, you owe it to them. That's the opposite of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim, they took advantage of Klal Yisrael. So they were just doing what God said to do. Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem said the Jews are going to be slaves. Hashem told Abraham, that's what's going to happen. So what's the Chiddush? Why are they being punished for? What did the Mitzrayim do wrong? So the Meshech Chachma says, you know what they did wrong? You know why Mitzrayim can't be the one to say, oh yeah, we're carrying out the will of God by afflicting the Jewish people? Because where's that Kar Satov? Vayakav Melech Hadash al Mitzrayim, Hashem lo yada es Yosef, you're out of your mind? Yosef, a Jew who saved your community, your economy, the whole world? And you, of all people, are going to be the ones to pretend you don't even know him? Right? They forgot Yosef. They pretend like they forgot Yosef. The Meshech Chachma says, no way. He says, Mitzrayim, you see the terrible midah of Kafui Tov by Mitzrayim. The fact that they could go to such the opposite of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying when we got to Har Sinai. So Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I'm going to be your God. You know why? Because I did a favor for you. And not only did I do a favor for you, I did a favor for you, which is the opposite of Sharetzi. Sichla Me'aretz Mitzrayim Yibesavata. I took you away from that mentality of Mitzrayim. So we see in creation of the world, Adam HaRishon, Kafoy Tov, Hakar Satov. We see by creation of Klal Yisrael, Anochi Hashem Elokecha versus Mitzrayim. And the same thing is true in our personal lives. Every single human being, the first relationship that we have is with our parents, the ones who created us. And the Yerushalmi refers to Kibud Ava'im as Chamura Shebechamuros. Again, I want to personally thank my parents for not being here tonight so I don't have to feel bad. Chamura Shebechamuros. The strongest of the strongest, the heaviest of the heavy. The most serious, the most impossible mitzvah to do. The Sefer Achinuch writes in Mitzvah 33, Mitzvah Lamed Gimel, what's the root, what's the shorish of this mitzvah of Kibud Ava'im? Very simply, Hakar Satov. From the second you're born, you have to live a life of Hakar Satov. Your parents do so much for you. Regardless of what your relationship with them is like or not like. The fact that they created you, it's an endless amount of Hakar Satov. Rabbi Tarfon would lie down on the floor and let his mother walk on him. And he said, I did Kibud Ava'im. And the rabbi said, no, you didn't. That's not even half of what's expected of you. It's impossible. But again, you see the very root of being a human being, of being a created being, is this midah of Hakar Satov. There's an interesting line from the Maharal. The Maharal says, in the Gur Aryeh, in a super commentary on Rashi, it's usur to do a favor for a person who doesn't have a Kar Satov. Imagine. It's usur. Why? I think you could say, because it undermines creation. Creation is built on a system of people being Makir Tov. A human being is built that way. The Torah is given to us that way. Creation of the world, Adam HaRishon, failed in that way. Rav Huttner, in his Pachad Yitzchak letters, in letter 212, he quotes this Maharal, and he says, why is that so? Why is it usur to do, it's a strange Maharal, people are trying to figure it out, it's a halacha that you can't do a tova for a person who's kafoy tov. Why is that? Because Rav Huttner says, because an action is evaluated, is assessed in accordance with the degree that the person appreciates it. So if you're going to waste your efforts on someone who's not going to appreciate it, then the action itself is not going to be, is not going to shake up the heavens. When you do something and someone's so thankful, Hashem pays attention to that. So Rav Huttner writes in this letter, he's writing to a person and using this Maharal as a springboard to thank the person. Rav Huttner says, from the way that I'm writing you this letter and from the way that our Kehillah has thanked you, that itself indicates that you did a big thing for us. The more you appreciate it, the more it shows, again, that even that small thing that they did for you is in fact a very big thing. And of course, this is our name. Klal Yisrael are called, one of the many names that we have, but one of our essential names is what? Yehudim. Yehudim. Why are we called Yehudim? Why was Yehuda called Yehuda? Because Leah says in Parshas Vayetzai, Hapam Odes Hashem. And the Chazal say that Leah was the first person in her unique way to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that way. So therefore, it's the very essence of what it means to be a Jew. To be a human, to be a Torah personality, to be a human being created by someone, by parents. Again, regardless of how well we know our parents or don't know our parents, if they're alive, not alive, we have to live with a sense of tremendous debt and Hakar Satov to all the people around us who shape our lives. I want to end with one final story, and then we'll go next door to Dav Meir for those who are interested. I grew up in Philadelphia, and one of the Rashi Yeshiva, the Philadelphia Yeshiva, was Rav Elia Svei Zatzal. And Rav Elia was one time approached by one of his Talmidim, who had waited years and years and years. They hadn't had children. And finally he was blessed with a child, but the child was sickly and remained in the NICU for a long time. And the doctors at this particular hospital took such good care of him. And he felt such a sense of debt to the staff, to the doctors, the nurses, all the people who had helped out. He felt a tremendous sense of Hakar Satov. And he came to his Rosh Hashiva, Rav Elia, and he said, Rabbi, what should I do? What's the right way to say thank you? So Rav Elia said, don't do anything right now. You'll thank them on the way out, but don't send flowers. Just wait. Next year, when your son is 1 year old, and now he's healthy, he's getting a little stronger, bring your child back to the hospital and show the people who took care of your child. Show them, look, he's alive because of you. He survived because of you. And do that again when he's 2. And do that again when he's 3. And do that again when he's 4. And he kept bringing this child back. He came as bar mitzvah. He brought his child back again to show them, we've reached this unbelievable milestone. He's turning 13. A bar mitzvah for a Jewish boy. And the staff, you can daven Maariv in here. I'll be done in 30 seconds. And the staff, the head nurse, wrote him the following letter. Listen to this letter. It's beautiful. Congratulations on your family milestone. We wanted to let you know how much your visits have meant to us over the years. We work in a high-risk setting, never knowing if things will turn out all right. Even after a child leaves our care, we have little or no idea whatever became of our efforts. I was not even at the hospital when your child was treated here, but you should know that when we train for this difficult and often thankless task, your son has become the poster child of what's possible. Every year they brought the child back. We mention again and again that the infant that we are caring for may turn out like your child. And then the note continued. Many people send us flowers, balloons, and candies. The flowers eventually wilt, the balloons deflate, and candies are eaten up. But the gift that you have given us has been proven valuable beyond comparison. That was the wisdom of Elias saying. You want to really say thank you? It's an ongoing process. So Mirtz Hashem, we should all go home. We should take these lessons to heart. The lessons of Klal Yisrael, becoming a nation. And the failure of Mitzrayim, to appreciate everything that Klal Yisrael had done for them. And all the stories that we learned tonight. Whether it's Ben Adam L'Chavero, Ben Adam L'Makom, Ben Adam L'Atzma, whatever it is. To say thank you to our spouses, those of us who are married. To say thank you to our neighbors, our friends, our family, our rabbis. And last but not least, I thank you all for joining me tonight and wish you a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you. We will not be a shir next week, unfortunately. Okay, but we'll pick up, God willing, in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm.